The committee will return to order. As a reminder, Mr. Corporate, you are still under oath. Before we begin, Senator Ostick has asked that the DMBOK wheel diagram be entered into the record, and without objection, so ordered. Let's begin our second round of questions.
Thank you. And it is pronounced Dimbok.
Very well. Thank you for the clarification.
Now, Mr. Corporate, I want to look more closely here at the Dimbok wheel. Do you recognize this diagram?
Leadership does not need to be concerned with such minute detail. No company needs its executive board to decide whether a data element is named customer number or customer account number. No officer council needs to see, let alone review, the details of a logical data model. Leadership needs to be aware of the changing data management landscape, especially the potential of AI to accelerate that strategy. But it's much more important for them to understand how to create a strategic data direction and then appropriately delegate the tasks to accomplish that strategy. Then, leadership needs to hold their organizations accountable for executing appropriately on that strategy. Senator, the problem, with all due respect, is that when it comes to data governance, you don't know what you don't know.
I take issue with that characterization. I was doing data governance before you were born.
Senator!
My apologies. Please, continue.
It's a challenge everywhere, and it's not your fault. For decades, the principles of data governance have been described in the same way, illustrated in the same way, taught in the same way, and implemented in the same way, or at least attempted to be implemented. Yes, there have been some successes, but most of those are limited in scope. But there have been an order of magnitude more failures.
We do agree on that point. There have been far too many data governance failures, and I would assert that they failed not because they weren't doing all this other stuff, but because they weren't doing the fundamentals. Do you agree with this?
Senator, they weren't doing any of it. That's why you need me in this office. The conversation needs to change. The mindset needs to change. A new approach is needed, a new strategy, and that's what I bring to this role.
Will you then commit to working with me and my office to develop a data strategy that focuses on the fundamentals?
I look forward to working with you on the strategy. Your decades of experience in the area are valuable, and the fundamentals are a necessary prerequisite. As secretary, I will establish a strategy that builds upon those fundamentals to bring out the value from data and do it in a way that's ethical and secure.
I will hold you to that commitment. I yield back.
I have no further questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Corporate. The record will remain open for the next 24 hours for any additional questions and exhibits. With that, we adjourn this hearing.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
I think he'll be confirmed.
No, I hope so. We seem to be on the precipice of a real sea change in data governance.
Precipice, huh? You got that from your new Word a Day calendar?
Something like that.
And a sea change in data governance is needed. The new data governance narrative is framed with a conundrum. Data governance needs to speak in terms of value, but it's not a sparkly thing like AI. It's the boring background stuff. Data governance is the person who always makes sure the coffee is fresh and the donuts are visible before the meeting starts. It needs to be there, but it isn't sexy. In spite of data governance being a capability with minimal cost increase, leadership is owed a statement of value and some sort of return on investment if one is possible. The logic for this is simple. Data governance is a business program. Therefore, it needs to add value to the business. Any long-term cost that exceeds that perceived value is unacceptable. Tangible results, though, are hard to see. Data governance programs will have a weak business case. Far too often, I hear data governance is required to improve report accuracy and ensure better decisions and lightweight stuff like that. It's not even an objective. These cannot take the place of some specific business benefits. Leadership might receive criticism for remaining data illiterate, but many data groups get equal attention by creating insipid business cases. So here's the secret sauce. The treatment of data and information as an asset should tightly connect to business activity. A business case is required even if not requested. Here's why. Data governance holistic. It requires enterprise attention even if you're non-invasive or low profile. There will be naysayers and you need to handle them. Data governance will not succeed if you can't measure it. And success measures come from business metrics. There may be overwhelming data quality issues and strong pressures from initiatives and projects and regulators. And all of these create a risk of non-united data governance activity. So without the enterprise oversight of that, we're dumbed down. The business case for data governance is marginalized or ignored because you cannot be viewed as a real business case. Financial management believes a business case with tangible returns is impossible because managed data and content are intangible. Well, this is incorrect, but we're working on that. The business case is de-emphasized, though, and a bit of creativity is required by us to convince that this very narrow thinking can be converted into a legitimate business case with good benefits. So, data governance adds value. It must be defined, and then you have to do some head work that needs to be done to get there. This doesn't mean it's the next big shiny thing. Sorry, no sparkly. But it does mean leaderships need to see this as an essential part of the organization, and value creates space and priority and metrics to pay attention. Be nice to each other. I am delighted to welcome my friend, colleague, fellow author, and fellow Yinzer, my buddy Robert Siner, or Bob Siner, whatever you want to call him. Mr. Siner, welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
I am really glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me, John.
Well, we're delighted you're here because you have had a significant voice in our topic. Those of you listening to the pod know this is our third and final episode of an arc on data governance. And we figured that it would be a good idea for Bob and I to talk together as a finale, because between him and I, we've written 80% of the words about data governance, and we both write heavily. We talk a lot about it, and you and I just did an article together, right?
We did. We did a call to action together.
A call to action. Let's start with this call to action stuff. Give me your words on the state of this thing called data governance.
Data governance is happening whether we want to recognize it or call it out or not. So data governance, there's a lot that's being written about how everything is failing, how data governance is failing, how data modeling is failing, data management is failing. And no, we don't really think it's, and this is, I think, where we connected, you and I, John, is that it's not really that it's failing. It's more that it's being misrepresented. It's not, people don't really understand what is necessary to implement formal governance within an organization. So we took, I think you reached out to me first, or I was thinking of reaching out to you. And so we got to put our heads together and just put some basic things that need to change about the way people talk about data governance, the way they present it to their leadership. They present it as it's something brand new, something that is going to impugn whatever innovation is taking place in an organization. And it doesn't have to be that way. So it was a great article. I think it received a lot of attention on my side on LinkedIn, on your side.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time to start carrying that forward.
Okay, but we're saying to change, and by the way, the article, we put it in LinkedIn and we put it on our respective websites as well. So yours is, mention your website, plug time.
KIKconsulting.com, but you can't find it from the site. You need to find it through the LinkedIn post.
Okie dokie, and mine is on the very creative name of johnladley.com. I spent a lot of money on that to get that name. Also, it is linked to on the podcast website. So if you go out to www.counterthreadedproductions.com in the narration of this episode, you will see it. Also on YouTube, it will be, below. And I've always wanted to say this, Bob, and I'm glad you're the guy for the first time to hear this, because we just popped out on YouTube a couple of episodes ago. Click and subscribe. Oh, that gives me goosebumps. All right. Anyway.
And so the name of the piece is Resetting the Data Governance Narrative.
Resetting it. So someone says, well, what's this article about? I'm a CEO. I'm really, really, really busy. Tell me in 20 seconds, what's the narrative and what are we changing? Tell me what I got to change.
Well, people should refer to the article.
I'm a CEO. I'm too busy for all of that. You've got to use words.
Well, so one of the first things that you should ask your leadership is what governance means to them. If governance means we need to do the right things, we need to be auditable in the way that we do the right things, that we need to have formalized accountability, that we need to, as I define data governance, as the execution and enforcement of authority over data. A lot of executive leadership think that's already taking place right now, but they don't know the reality that it's really not. So we've got to change the way they think about governance. And when I talk about non-invasive data governance quite a bit, it starts with the premise of there's already governance taking place in your organization. It may be very informal, and because it's informal or there's no formal program for it, it's very inefficient and it's very ineffective. So if we can just improve formality for relationships that people already have for data, that's a start towards formal governance. You don't need to assign people to new roles. You don't need to sell it as something that's going to prevent your ability to operate effectively as an organization. The goal is that if you're going to, in this day and age, use AI in your future, that AI doesn't care where it gets its data from. But there's one thing for certain, it needs quality data. It needs data that people have confidence in order to make its decisions. So I think that's one of the first things, is that we just need to talk about a new kind of governance within organizations.
When you say new kind of governance, so again, CEO face, every time you say something, a new kind of or a new something, CEOs get a little nervous. They think costs are a problem, or someone's asking them to do total quality management all over again or something upheaving like that. And
bad thing. That changed the way processes were done within organizations.
Yep.
So don't talk negatively about TQM. Because they've been through this before. They've seen it. I think we even wrote about that in the narrative, that they've been through this before. They know the problem is that you can get to the same goal. There's literally three approaches to data governance, if you ask me. One is the top-down command control. Mm-hmm. Thou shalt do this. We're going to assign you a new role. The second one is more of a traditional approach to data governance. And so, John, I'm sure you've seen the movie Field of Dreams, where the line for the movie is, if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. Well, the concept of a traditional data governance program is that we're going to build out this thing called data governance, and we expect that people are going to navigate toward it. Like, you know, if you build it, they will come. You expect that to happen. It doesn't happen in most organizations. People are busy. People are busy doing their jobs. And their jobs involve data a lot of the time. The third approach is to take a less threatening, as I call it, non-invasive approach, where you just recognize that there's already governance taking place. If you're a university that's been around for 50 years, and there's some that have been around for a lot longer than 50 years, or a corporation. You've been governing your data to some extent. You've just been governing it informally. And one way to reset the narrative, what's the new data governance, is let's leverage what we've got, make changes where we need to, but expect that there's already levels of governance taking place within the organization. It is really a new way of looking at data governance.
Well, the CEO might say then, okay, so you say we're doing this now, but what I'm hearing is we're not doing it the right way because we're not getting the results we want. Is that a fair response from the CEO?
Well, if the truth is that they're not getting the results they want, then that's not up for debate, right? The question is, you know, what is preventing them from getting the results that they want?
Mm-hmm. What are some of those things? Let's just peel off on that. What are some of the things that are, you know, data governance, we say it's not a failure.
People don't know what data exists. Start with a simple data inventory. Define what type of data is going to be in your inventory, but recognize who has accountability for that data now, who they share that data with.
You mean, okay, again, CEO, you mean we don't know that?
I say no, you have no idea of that.
Okay. Yeah.
You have spreadsheets that you're making decisions on that might not be recorded anywhere.
Yeah.
Except for that you count on it or your right-hand person is using that. There's systems upon systems, and then there's data from the outside, and then there's unstructured data and semi-structured data mm-hmm. that is now being fed into your large language models for artificial intelligence. All of that stuff has to be governed. Do you know what data you have? I would say most organizations, see, executives might believe that they have that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, if they had to ask somebody, show it to me.
Yeah.
John, you answer that question. Is it readily available?
Well, I was going to answer that question with another question I asked when I ask an organization, you kind of sort of, you and I have been practicing this stuff a long time. Between the two of us, if you add it up, it's about 1 million years. Okay. So in terms of this whole inventory of stuff, the CEO is going to first of all say, so I ask the question differently. I will say, you don't know where your data is because I will offer to you that it takes you longer to get things you need than you're comfortable with. And the CEO will go, well, yes, we can't get the quarterly reports on time. And I asked somebody the other day for this year's numbers over last year's numbers across a certain filter, and it took them 4 days to find it. And I asked them how many customers we have, and I got 6 different answers, right? So they will manifest that answer that, no, they don't know what they have, and they don't know about it. But so I say all these things about, you know, where you kind of subconsciously know you don't know where your data is if you're a CEO, but that's not important. What's important is, why should I know that? I had a CEO ask me years ago, this changed my career, Bob. This was a defining moment. I'm talking to the chairman of the board of the fourth largest bank on the planet. And I had 15 minutes with this person. And because they had to approve this project and he had to sign off on it. So we go over, I do my pitch. And he said, this is great. This is well and good. And instinctively, John, instinctively, I know you're right. We need to do this data stuff, manage the data, oversight, all of that. I get it, because we're a bank, for heaven's sakes, right? I go, yeah. He said, but I can't tell that to the board, all right? Because the board is going to tell me, go out and hire another 30 people with laptops and have them do more spreadsheets and have them get the data to you quicker, all right? And we will hire 30 people, and they will have MBAs, and they will have jobs in the community, and we will look like a better company. He said, that's what's driving my decisions. So tell me why I shouldn't go hire 30 more people and give them laptops. I said, I'll get back to you.
Well, there's
there had to be a business value. See, that's the whole, there's had to be a business value to that. So,
but there's also a risk component to it. We can't just focus on the risk, because there's got to be the value. There's got to be the innovation. Mm-hmm. There's got to be those pieces to it. Yes, but there's a risk component, because if you don't know what data you have, then you can't know who has access to that data. You can't know if they're the right people or the wrong people that you are allowed to, you know, certain data needs to be held private. That's why there's all the classification of data and mm-hmm. how data can be handled and how data can be shared. And how can you govern that in an auditable way if, in fact, you don't even know what data you have to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about business value, yes, it takes a long time for them to get their reports. But, you know, sometimes we need to share examples of things that are happening day to day in operations to the executive level.
Yep.
So that they're not just seeing this report that they requested from somebody or they wanted to see the data this way, that they understand the inefficiencies and the ineffectiveness that goes on every day in all of the workers of the organization. Not only because they can't get access to the data that they need or they don't know it exists, you don't have any record of it.
Yep.
I mean, it's a very simple place to start.
Yeah, it is a simple place. And risk will perk up a leadership. You know, the word risk will perk them right up. So on the other hand, now we've talked to the executives. You and I also work with the practitioners, the folks, what we call the data people or the data professionals and stuff like that. What part of this narrative change, where do they come in of this narrative change? Do they have new words to say to each other? Do they have some new things they need to do?
Well, I think that part of the reason why data governance isn't achieving the results that organizations expect is that the way that the people who are the practitioners are presenting it to the executive level need some work. They need some words. They need to reframe. That's all. The whole concept of resetting the narrative is to start providing them with words that they can use to convince their leadership that governance is already taking place and that it doesn't have to be this costly endeavor that you throw tons of money at. Certainly at some point, you're going to want to have some place to store your data inventory, you know, a data catalog tool or something like that. You know, it just makes sense to do that. But once you've recognized that, you know, we use the expression data as an asset for so long, it's like it just flies past people's heads. They don't even listen to that anymore.
That's a good, I'd like to go down that little road for a little bit. That is, that's one thing when someone says, how do I convince leadership data is an asset from the data practitioner? I don't know what you ask. I ask him, I said, do you know what an asset is? Do you know what that means as a data practitioner? And they go, well, it's an asset. I said, do you know what an asset is in the context of a CEO? When you say asset, they're going to put a balance sheet in their head, right? They're going to have assets, liabilities, and equity. That's where your assets show up. Now, can you read a balance sheet? That's one thing I tell people. I say, but John, what can I do? I tell people, learn how to read a balance sheet. Start to learn that language. Because if data is an asset, you better be able to take it to the next step is what you mean by that in that particular organization. We've used that, to your point, Bob. Myself included, years ago, we just beat that to death, and it became a cliche.
Overkill, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, now it's a trope. You know, now it's the data architect going, data is an asset, data is an asset, data is an asset. And then you just, nobody hears you anymore. No, nobody hears you anymore.
Well, there are people that focus on monetizing data and data value within an organization. I'm not one who focuses on that. You know, people talk about data governance and we've got to change the name of data governance to data enablement. And I know how you love the term.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you've let me know before that. Yeah. I actually like using the word using data governance as a catalyst. As you know, catalyst gives you the idea of sparking innovation, sparking an explosion. A catalyst to something is something that gets us moving, gets whatever is happening.
Yeah. Going. And I see that, but go ahead, finish your thought.
You can't say that data is a catalyst, although I guess, you know, data could be a catalyst for an organization. And it is an asset. We may not want to, if we've heard it too many times, but maybe we need to come up with another word. There's so many, there's so many buzzwords that get added to it. I just think the way that we frame the importance of data within an organization needs to change.
Yeah. So you and I have a real common thread between us. You and I, you read my books, read your books, and you'll see big common consensus. And you and I have talked about that. And then around the fringes, you'll see a something or other. Well, maybe we don't look at it the same way. This is one of those things. You are well known for boiling things down into a simple approach, the non-invasive data governance. That was a plug. The non-invasive data governance thing here. Okay. And that's a simple way. Formalize the informal. And that's beautiful. That is just beautiful. I do the same thing with the words. You know, governance. I'm not crazy about changing the words for a way to like enablement or something to make it a sparkly. Because I have a degree in accounting. That's where I started in this world. I was a boring accountant. Governance, the word governance has existed for a very, very long time. You and I put this in the article. It's existed for a very, very long time. And then we put a new adjective in front of it, and we put that adjective in front of it, and then it was all sparkly and all. No, it's boring. It's how can you say that sparkly? The first thing to do is what we're asking organizations to do is they take stuff, they enter it into the computer, they use it. And when they use it, they generate some sort of value, either through utility or making a decision or creating a new product or whatever the word, monetizing it, whatever that means to them. And when you have something that you get future value from, that is an accounting definition of an asset. Okay, so we do that, but we also need controls. And governance, since the pyramids went up, and someone said, that's a qubit, that's not a qubit. All right. And
Bing. Have you ever heard the yes. Bill Cosby sketch?
The Bill Cosby sketch. Yeah. We're dating ourselves, sir. Anyway, so we have this aspect. There's this core simplicity to governance. And it echoes what you say. We've done this before. We do it all the time. We do it now in our organizations. I don't know if I'm comfortable with the sparkly stuff until I've got the blocking and tackling stuff done.
I just used that analogy the other day, the blocking and tackling. We came from the Chuck Knoll era of Steeler football. So
yeah,
that's all we talk about is blocking and tackling. So, right. The bottom line is that no matter what approach you take to data governance, okay, I define data governance very simply as the execution and enforcement of authority over the management of data and data-related assets. So when I say execution and enforcement of authority, it makes people cringe and they say, well, how the heck can we do that in a non-invasive way? Well, the bottom line is no matter what approach you take to data governance, you need to execute and enforce authority over that data. Because otherwise, if you just leave people to do what they want, it's not going to improve. I always use the line, the data will not govern itself.
No, it will not.
The data governance program will not formalize itself. These data quality issues, the data accessibility issues, they're not going to resolve on their own. They need some level of formality. And we need to come up with a plan, and then we need to execute and enforce whatever level of authority is necessary. Doesn't mean you have to be top down in your face, you know, assigning people. You can take a different tactic to this, that it's more natural, it's more acceptable to share our friend David Kowalski's line. It's more holistic within the organization.
Yeah.
So
it's business as usual. I like to use BAU. It's business as usual.
It is, but let's just formalize how we do it. You're not
sure.
Speak to a room of 100 people and split it down the middle and say, okay, you people on the left side, you use sensitive data. You need to protect that data. But you people on the right side of the room, some of you use sensitive data too, but we're just going to let you do whatever the heck you want to do.
Spot on.
We've got to take people's existing relationships to data and formalize them and execute and enforce authority.
Yeah.
No matter how you do it, whether it's non-invasive or be as invasive as you want. But your organization going to accept?
I'm personally a big fan of just hitting people with sticks till they collaborate. Hey, that was a great point to move on to our concluding questions for our interview. So we ask everybody two essential questions. Who is a non-technology leader? Someone who is a non-tech leader that has heavily influenced you in your career and life, and why did they influence you?
I don't know why this came to me, but I'm just going to name a person probably nobody else has named. Have you ever heard of the person, a guy's name is Randy Pausch, P-A-U-S-C-H, I think.
No one has mentioned that on the pod.
He wrote the I think his book was called The Last Lecture. And so he was a Carnegie Mellon professor, and he was dying. And before he passed away, he wrote The Last Lecture. And it's a very short book, and it really stuck with me, a lot of the things that he said. So people should go and take a look at, you know, what his whole thinking about his life and his family and his career and where the world's going. It's written several years ago, so I'm sure there's other viewpoints these days. Yeah. That might take precedence. So I'm going to list that guy because I'm guessing nobody else would list that guy.
Oh, well, I have heard of him, and that is a profound document. I recommend it as well. All right, so second question. If you could do one thing, if you had power, you were Harry Potter or you were in charge, if you could get one thing implemented in any organization around our world of data, what would that be? What would be the one magic spell you cast?
So one thing that I would like to see happen within organizations in general is that they adopt a way to be able to be stealthy in their modes of data governance, where they can kind of be under the radar. Because as organizations are changing the way that they have resources allocated, they can't leave data behind. Data is going to continue to not only be an asset, but it can be an extreme liability to an organization as well. So I guess if I'm going to leave something to one organization, it is, you know, find ways to do what you're being asked to do. It doesn't mean you have to like it. It just means that you have to be able to, if you want to keep your job and stay in a role where you're managing and governing data, find a way to be stealthy in your approach to governance.
That's,
I don't know if that answers your question.
No, that's very good. I say it was your superpower. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
And thanks to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros. If you think you're treating data as an asset, but you can't read a balance sheet, call on Hubris. Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. The prevailing assessment among many in the field is that data governance is failing, although not everybody agrees. Bob mentioned that data governance is happening whether we like it or not, and that it's being misrepresented and perhaps lacks formalized processes. A couple of episodes ago, Gwen Thomas also disputed that notion, suggesting that legacy data governance is table stakes and needs to evolve to include other capabilities like business value and ethics. But maybe all sides of this argument are correct. Nobody is doing nothing, and some organizations are succeeding, but we've been at this for decades, and I don't think that many would argue that data governance has been as widespread and as impactful as we had hoped it would be by now. Picking up on Bob's theme, maybe what you're doing doesn't look like data governance, and maybe it doesn't feel like data governance, but you're doing something. So start with what you're doing. Because if you've got data in a file or a database or XML or JSON or anything with a structure or schema, then you have a physical data model by default. That means that you can have an inventory of data assets, so formalize that. When you gather business requirements, whether in a specifications document or in user stories or features or wherever, is the data that you're capturing and storing defined? If so, you have definitions. Collect those into a metadata repository, formalize it, and incorporate it into the standard development and move to production processes. Are you managing user logins? In most organizations, data security is the most formalized data governance capability. Maybe there's more data governance going on in your organization than you realize. A couple episodes ago, I suggested that you inventory the controls that already exist in your company and think about how those controls could be applied to data. Between now and next time, the one thing you can do is to approach the question from the opposite direction and see what you're already doing that could be considered some kind of data governance and look to formalize it. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
We're going to wrap up on our game show. We have a game show, and okay. I will explain it to you. It's sort of a game show. It's sort of a group participation kind of thing. And what we do is I will play a snippet of music. So the way our game show works is I will play a snippet of music. You will listen, and because music is evocative, I would like you to share whatever feelings related to our topic of data that music evokes in you. let's see here. I have a list of royalty-free music and stinger type things that we at great personal expense spent no money on whatsoever. And you can pick it out. So pick a number between 1 and 7 for me.
Let's just go to the max. Let's go to 7.
Okay. I'm going to go to number 7. And I'm going to play it. And then you just think about it a second and then tell me what it evokes from a data context. All right. Here we go. That's not it. That's our theme song. Let's try this again.
Heard that song before.
Yeah. Good heavens, John. There we go.
That was it?
That's it. It's a stinger, it's called.
To me, it started higher and it ended lower. It also sounded like it was leading up to something that was major that was going to happen or to be announced. So I think it sounds like I want to hear what happens next. I mean, it's kind of a lead in. And so let's relate that to data. Mm-hmm. I think if this whole conversation has been about having conversations with people at the highest level of the organization. So we need to set appropriate expectations with those people, but we need to have the appropriate message to announce. So like I said, that music kind of came down and it stopped and it's like, okay, now we're ready for something else to happen.
Yeah.
Set the appropriate expectations. And then when you're ready to share that message, nail it.
Got it.
Read the article that you and I wrote.
Yes, read the article.
Read the 3 books now on non-invasive data governance. Plug again.
Plug.
I enjoyed playing your game. I was expecting like the newlywed theme or something like that.
No, because we'd have to pay money for that. Mr. Siner, thank you so much for being on the pod.
My pleasure, like always.
And thank you so much for playing our fabulous game show.
Thank you. Do I win?
You win the today's grand prize.
I'll be looking for it in the mail.
Which is a conversation with Meenakshi. We'll just send you a link to the podcast. You win a free listening of the podcast when it's ready. Thank you so much, man. Take care. Right. Good to see you. Good to talk with you. Appreciate it, man. Bye-bye.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This wraps up our data governance arc, but I'm certain that this won't be the last time we'll talk about it. After all, as Bob said, data won't govern itself, even with all the attention it's getting for enabling AI. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, The Fuss About Data Governance, Part 3, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2025, all rights reserved.